This week on Art of the Air features veteran stage, film, television actor, and playwright Charlotte Booker, sharing her storied career plus a one-woman musical, Elsa Lanchester, She's Alive, next Chicago-based realist oil painter, Jessica Schmidt-Mattingly, who uses a surreal rendering of her subjects. Our spotlight's on LaPorte County Symphony's 30th Annual Holiday at the Pops concert.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight from LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra and the Executive Director, Emily Giannis, and she's going to tell us about what they have coming up and a little bit about what they have been doing and what they're coming up in their year, and we always appreciate her coming on the show and sharing with us. Emily, welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you for having me. It's always great to be here.
I think you're going to hit your 30th season, if I'm correct, of the Holiday Pops. So tell us about that, what we can kind of expect. And well, in retrospect, though, you just had the Day of the Dead concert in November. So
Right. Your
premier concert of the year. I know you've had the Drayton Family concert, but tell us a little bit about how that went, and then we'll move on.
Thanks for asking. It was wonderful. We had a wonderful turnout. It was truly a cultural celebration, exactly what we wanted. We had our taco truck out front. We had our dancers from Ballet Folklorico Tapatio from Hobart. We had a bakery from South Bend, La Centrale, that came to sell pastries. And the orchestra just performed some really fabulous pieces by Mexican composers. I think everyone's favorite, though, was the guitar solo, the Rodrigo Guitar Concerto by our guest artist who came, Guido Sanchez Portuguez. That was a really special treat to have him there.
Oh, how excellent.
And so tell us a little bit about what we have coming up for Holiday Pop, 30th annual. Of course, Dr. Carolyn Watson is, of course, your conductor. But anything extra special? I mean, any special guests that might be in a red suit or something?
I don't know if we'll have that jolly guy here, but we will have another jolly guy by the name of Tim King, who will be soloing on the typewriter for the typewriter concerto. So that's going to be a really fun treat. I think audiences will really like that. Another one I'm looking forward to is we have a fun piece called Bassoon, It Will Be Christmas, with three bassoon soloists, which is going to be really fun. Yeah, and they're also going to play a Duke Ellington Nutcracker suite that I think is going to be really beloved by everyone, jazzy and fun.
Sounds great. And we get to see Tim. So that's
right.
Extra
Yes. Bonus. I know. Yes.
So, Emily, I was so excited to see the new season posted. So any inside information on any of that? I mean, it's just delightful, the whole thing. And we get to hear you at the end of it. So.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. In the spring, one little exciting tidbit that we haven't really announced is that as a baritone by the name of Leroy Davis is going to be singing with us, making his LCSO debut. And he is from the Ryan Opera Center at the Lyric Opera of Chicago. Just a really fabulous baritone singer who's going to join me for the Rodgers and Hammerstein program. So I'm really excited to sing with him, and I'm excited for our audiences to get to hear him as well.
Well, and that's called Some Enchanted Evening. So I assume we're going to be hearing things with that title, at least from South Pacific and everything. Though Emily won't say it, I will. She's a remarkable vocalist. I mean, I know that she was before we met, and you know, she said that I knew she was a professional vocalist. But the first time I heard her, it just knocked my socks off. I was just so impressed. And I mean, really, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but I was surprised how absolutely awesome you were. So you have some other things coming up past holiday stop. You have your second subscription concert, the Animal Kingdom. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's going to be at LaPorte High School. And this one is really geared towards families. It's going to be at 4 p.m. So a nice family friendly hour. And we are going to have some special guests. We're going to have a petting zoo. We're going to have the Humane Society there with us, bringing some animals with them and some activities for kids in the lobby. Prior to the concert at intermission. And for the program, you will get to enjoy Peter and the Wolf and the Carnival of the Animals, and then a U.S. premiere of a piece by an Australian composer called Dangerous Creatures. And that is Carolyn Watson's home country, of course, Australia. And it's all about, according to Carolyn, it's all about the creepy crawlies of Australia. So we're really looking forward to playing that and bringing that to the U.S.
Oh, that sounds so exciting. And then the Sound of Spring. So you're moving around with the orchestra. So that's at the Holdcraft.
That's right. Yeah, we always love to do one concert each year, or maybe two at the Holdcraft. It's a really nice space, very good acoustics. We love working with Arturo there at the Holdcraft.
Yeah, it's so comfortable and
it
sweet.
It is, yeah. We like it a lot there. That's going to be a fun one, too. Our education and community outreach manager, Jared Collar, is going to be soloing on a xylophone concerto, which is going to be really cool. It's very virtuosic. And it's actually a world premiere of a piece that has never been performed by a Swedish composer. By the name of Kel Reuker. I think I'm saying that right. and so that's going to be really cool.
Great season.
Yeah. Now, is there anything else going on besides concerts? I know you have the support group. Anything like that, the tease, auxiliary things?
Oh, yeah, Friends of the Symphony. Yeah, so we'll have a Friends of the Symphony meeting in March and in May. And so you can check our website, lcso.net, for those dates. Off the top of my head, I can't recall them, but we do have those. And then as well, you might find our small ensembles playing throughout the community. We have our small ensembles play at the PNW Sinai Forum prior to the speaker. And we also have a group that's going to be playing in Rolling Prairie at their Christmas in Rolling Prairie evening. And that's going to be at the library in Rolling Prairie. So people can get inside out of the cold and listen to some music while they're enjoying the downtown event in Rolling Prairie.
In our last few moments here, tell us again the dates for the Pops concert and information about tickets.
Sure. It is December 14th. At 7 p.m. Tickets can be purchased online at lcso.net. They will also be sold at the door. It's at the LaPorte Civic Auditorium. Doors will open at 5:30. Food and beverage will be for sale. Come on out and enjoy the holiday season. It's a great way to celebrate.
That's Emily Giannis, the Executive Director for the LaPorte County Symphony Holiday Pops this 30th season. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
Hey, this is Josh of The Empty Pockets, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Charlotte Booker to Art on the Air. Charlotte is an actor, writer, teacher with decades of experience on stage, film, and in television. She developed the solo show Elsa Lanchester, She's Alive, with music by her husband, Mark Nutter. They are now based out of Chicago and New York City. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Charlotte. I have to say, it's been like totally delightful delving into your work. It's just like, it was wonderful. I'm so happy to be meeting you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. I didn't know there was anything to really delve into, so I appreciate that.
Well, you've been delved into, and we were going to delve in more to your background, your origin stories, like I like to say, Charlotte. How you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Charlotte.
Oh, well, I was one of those kids. I think there are a lot of us who wanted to be in show business before I knew what show business was. I was an actor before I knew what that was. Before I ever saw a play, I knew I wanted to be in a play because I had seen movies about vaudeville. And I actually wanted to be in vaudeville, but I was, told eventually that, I guess you have to settle for theater. But I grew up all over the place because my father was in the Air Force, and so both of my parents were from the southern Midwest. My father was from Tennessee and my mother was from southeastern Missouri, which has a real twang, you know. So when I moved to places like Maine and Michigan and Texas and Arkansas and Okinawa and, all over the place, I tried to sound like the people on television, and mostly Lucille Ball, you know. So she became my idol. And it's a redhead thing. But also, my dad managed the movie theaters on Okinawa. And so I saw, as a child, I think every film. Well, I would sneak into the ones I wasn't supposed to see, the grown-up movies, you know.
Of course.
Yeah. And because of that, I got quite a good education in theater, too, because at that time they were filming a lot of plays, you know, Tennessee Williams plays. And so I remember I went to see Summer and Smoke when I was a little girl. And I thought, there's something about that woman. She's like the women in my family, sort of. She's like a movie star, but she's not quite beautiful, you know, or a plastic, I should say, in some way. She doesn't look like Sandra Dee. And she seems to be doing something a little deeper. And I thought, I think I can do that. So I told my mother, I want to be like that lady in Summer and Smoke. I know I can do that. I want to be that. And my mother was great, but she didn't get it this time. She said, "You are every bit as cute as Pamela Tiffin." And I thought, oh, I guess I better be careful about how I share my dreams from now on.
Or just be much more specific.
Yes. Well, as far as I was concerned, there was only one lady in that film. You know, I just saw something in her. I loved Geraldine Page. And then later she became my acting teacher when I moved to New York.
Yeah, that early beginning sounds so much like you were doing your own master classes with all the viewing.
I was. Well, yeah, I guess I was. And I was sort of studying it.
Right.
I used to go to the base libraries and check out soundtracks and cast albums and take them home, because we had to move all the time, so we didn't take things like that with us, you know. And so I would check them out and I'd listen to them over and over again and act out all the parts and imagine what the story was. Because sometimes what do you call that? The liner notes would tell you the story, and sometimes they wouldn't. And so I would sort of make up a story that went along with the songs, you know, for my own entertainment.
In those early years, did you have a favorite musical?
I'm crazy about Gypsy. I've always been crazy about Gypsy. That musical makes me cry every single time. I've probably seen it. Well, I've seen the movie many times, of course, and seen the TV versions, but I've seen it on stage maybe 12 times. And do you know the part where they do it the same way every production, where they turn into teenagers?
Right.
When they go from being small children and there are those streamers and they dance in and out of the streamers. I cry every time I see that. There's something about that simple magic. I mean, it's magical, but it's so easy. It's just people dancing back and, you know, and changing places. It makes me cry. I find it very moving. I find that story very moving. And I also love Oklahoma. A lot.
I do too.
the birth of the narrative form musical, the whole completion of what Rodgers and Hammerstein, we were talking about before we started, how that came together in Oklahoma was probably the first example of that collaboration.
And most of us, that was our first experience, theatrical experience. It was mine, Oklahoma. So
were you in it?
Yeah, yeah.
Who did you play?
Oh, you know, who knows? I can't even remember. I was just probably part of the background or something, but it was extremely memorable.
Oh, the music is wonderful.
Yeah, the music is really wonderful.
I played Ado Annie. That was you know.
Well, I could tell that just from our short time together.
Yeah, but I love that show. And of course, Sweeney Todd. I mean, I saw Sweeney Todd 3 times on Broadway. I love that show too.
Yeah. And that, of course, that we talked about that too. That was really into a heavy concept musical also itself. I mean, it really was, you know, that whole era in the 70s and everything. And of course, talking about Stephen Sondheim, you know, one of the things people don't know about Gypsy, just briefly back to that, is he actually fixed a lot of the music because Julie Stein was not, he was writing it, but there were a lot of parts of it that were not really complete. And so unofficially, he fixed a lot of the music in it.
It's so sophisticated.
Yes.
I mean, it. I don't know. And for a kid seeing it for the first time, there's a lot to identify with the children. And I think it's a great musical education.
Early musicals, how did it kind of progress your career? You're no longer the Air Force brat. Did you go to college or tell us a little about that journey?
I went to Northwestern.
Okay.
I really wanted to... I didn't know where to go. I was a good student, fortunately, and so I ended up going to Northwestern. But I wanted to go to Pasadena Playhouse because I had read that many movie stars had graduated from Pasadena Playhouse. So I wrote them a letter and said, I would like to come study with you. And I got a reply that we haven't had a school here for I can't remember how many years. It was like, you know, our last graduate was, I don't know, you know, Deborah Padgett or something. It had been a long time since they'd had a school.
Northwestern experience has gotten you probably a very good place because they have a tremendous theater program that they put a lot of people out.
Yeah.
I think somehow I always associate Anne Margaret with Northwestern. Maybe that's not a correct association, but
it is. And I think she was from Winnetka or Wilmette or something. But she went to Northwestern. She didn't last there very long, but she was one of my early influences too. I adored her, and it is a redhead thing. I always liked the performers with red hair. You know, you can't tell from the light, but my hair is. Was always auburn. Now it's gray, but you know, I still.
That's a problem we all have after a while. So,
yeah, but I adored her. Oh gosh, I still do. I admire her.
Completely.
She's a wonderful entertainer and a very strong person. I think, in spite of a lot of the roles she played, you know, I think she. I admire her.
Any other favorite actors or actresses or people that you've worked with? We want to take you out of college, whatever happened there, but you know.
Yeah. Well, I was lucky. I've been lucky to work with a lot of wonderful people. I worked with Ed Asner, who was one of those people who put his money where his mouth was. I mean, he really, if he had a conviction, he backed it up and he was not afraid to, you know, he was so gruff. You know, and in life too, he could be very, very gruff, but he was very, he was a softie and not afraid to say I was wrong, even about acting, about everything. He was just a very, I really admired him. And I worked with Madeline Kahn. I understudied her for about a year.
She's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Gone too soon. That, yeah. But for people, I mean, Geraldine Page was my favorite actor. I studied also with Shelley Winters. That was a
trip. Was that fun?
It was. You know what? It was really fun.
Yeah.
And she had issues, you know, but who doesn't? And when she was on, she was a really good teacher. And she told stories about, she had studied with Charles Laughton, and who, you know, was married to Elsa Lanchester, who later became my obsession. But, and she would talk about being in class with Charles Laughton and learning Shakespeare sonnets. And she was a surprising woman. She was very smart. And she even did for us the character that she used to do on the Johnny Carson show. She said, here's what I do. I stammer and I blink. And that's what she did when she was on. She developed that character, you know, to be funny. But yeah, I liked her too. And I studied with Murray Abraham very briefly, and with Uta Hagen. So that gets, after college, that's what I did.
And so what kind of performances do you get out of college? Tell us about the journey to perform. You know, that's usually the tough thing. I know, like when I was counseling students about it, I said, you know, this is different than what you think. You don't just graduate college and you go to right straight to a career. There's the path before you doesn't lay that way. So tell us about your path.
Well, I ended up doing melodramas on the Goldenrod Showboat, which doesn't exist anymore, on the Mississippi River. Played, you know, melodrama heroines and had people boo and hiss and cheer and all that stuff. It was really, sometimes it was really demoralizing, but you learn how to, as they say, save your butt on stage.
Right, you learn how to act.
And that's really, yeah. I didn't go the grad school route. A lot of people a little bit younger than me did, and some my age did too, but I didn't do that. I asked my counselor in college, what should I do? And he said, you're ready to work. Just try to get a job. So I was very fortunate. I joined the union, you know, pretty soon after getting out of school. So I was very lucky.
So you're talking about actors' equity then, right?
Yeah, actors' equity.
And, you know, the advice I've been now giving is, first of all, they've changed a lot of the rules, as you probably well know, about getting in. But I used to advise them in the old, I said, stay as long as you can as equity eligible, because you can still go do other stuff. There's, again, the rules have changed, but a lot of the professional or broadening professional is stay eligible as long as you can. I said, because if you get to a show that requires you to be totally full equity, I said, that closes the door on a lot of stuff that you can't do unless you do it under a pseudonym.
Especially in Chicago.
Right.
I think, you know, I lived in New York for about 40 years, and that is not true in New York. At least it wasn't
right
when I was coming up, but it still is true here.
Yeah.
There's some great work being done by people who aren't in the union. It kind of makes me sad that they probably don't make any money.
Right.
Because I think they should be, but, you know. I'm an FDR Democrat, so
well, there you go.
Union all the way.
Well, yeah, and you think about the history of what brought actors' equity to the being, and it's important that the actors, the way they were being treated was horrible sometimes. And
absolutely. They even provided their own costumes.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day, you know. And not only that, I mean, I am so happy that my union knew that someday, some actor in 1919 or something thought, someday there's going to be some woman who is so stupid about saving money, let's just put together a pension for them.
Right.
Now, I don't know any civilians, very few, who have pensions anymore, but older actors do.
Right.
And that's all because of the unions. I mean,
sure. One thing I was going to, before we take your career beyond that and what you've done, let's kind of look back as an actor for as long as you've been. Let's say you got someone budding, like high school, college. What advice would you give them?
Get a real education. I know that's probably not popular, because I also taught for a while, you know, and I was so disheartened by all the kids who thought they were going to be movie stars immediately, who didn't. When I taught NYU juniors, you know, at the Strasberg studio. They have different studios. It's a But anyway, I don't think that's a great system, frankly, because you learn one way of working, and the secret of working is to be able to work with all kinds of people, not sure. just one way, you know? But anyway, when I taught there, I forced my students to do a book report about, for film acting, about a director. Read a biography of a director. And I asked everyone, who's your favorite film director? And most of them knew Steven Spielberg, and most of them knew Tarantino, but nobody in the past,
right?
Nobody young and their contemporaries. I'm like, why would anybody want to work with you? You don't know anything. You don't know anybody. If you met Tarantino, what would you talk to him about?
Right.
You can't just talk to him about his movies. He's interested in other stuff, you know. Sure. Anyway, so yeah, I would say get a good education, be able to contextualize your role, where you fit, you know, right. in the story.
And be able to do all the big three, at least to some degree, sing, dance, and act in this day and age.
Absolutely.
You may not be able to do them all perfect, but the days of the old style thing where you had chorus people that could sort of move and dancers who could sort of sing, that's gone. You need to really knock it out of the park with both of those.
Yeah. And you can't, both singers and dancers, if you, you know, specialize in one of those things, you got to be a really good actor to do well. Didn't used to have to be, I think.
No, you could, you could kind of skate through on a lot of those types of things. And now because you got a lot of colleges cranking people up, but you also have a lot of people doing things. And I know I used to sit down and have the talk with anyone that was serious about going into it. And I said, you need to understand what kind of commitment you're looking at. I said, it's not just going to, you know, get a degree and, you know, you're getting a job. I says, you need to get trained up in all those three and you need to keep them consistent. And if you don't have that commitment, think about plan B right now, because if you're not really going to put that kind of time in.
Uta Hagen used to say, if you can even imagine doing anything else, leave right now. You have my permission, please go. And of course, you know, most of us were like, I'll never do anything else ever. And then end up working as, you know, answering service operators and waiters. And that's another thing. I mean, Shelley Winters used to say this. It's a very good thing to have another kind of job.
Oh, sure.
Because you learn about real life. You can't just go from your head to the stage, you know? So
how did your obsession with Elsa Lanchester begin? And I don't know if that ties in with, and like, if you can also weave in when you met your husband and what you're doing, how you met.
Oh, well, I met my husband when we were 20 years old. And then he said it was inevitable that 45 years later we'd get married. We were in The Matchmaker together at Northwestern, and he played Cornelius and I played Mrs. Malloy. So, and then we married other people. We'd never dated. We just liked each other. He was very cute. And then we both got divorced and Facebook brought us together.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's a whole story.
That's lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. And he plays piano for Elsa, which is interesting because Elsa's boyfriend, she was married to Charles Laughton, of course, for 33 years, but they both had affairs. And because he was, wasn't there, so I don't know for sure, but I think he was bisexual. So they both had affairs. And Ray Henderson was her piano player. They traveled together for many years, and that was her boyfriend, her paramour.
Paramour. Oh my gosh. So tell us about She's Alive, your one woman show.
Yeah, well, I always loved The Bride of Frankenstein, but I didn't put together that same woman was Katie Nanna. In Mary Poppins, and all the other little maids in between, like in David Copperfield and the bishop's wife and all those. And when I did, I thought, oh, this is a fabulous story. I read her book, and the older I get, the more interested I am in people who stay strong and passionate as they get older. Ruth Gordon is another one of my idols, and she and Elsa were friends, which absolutely makes sense. And so when I realized that, I thought this, and she also thought of herself, Elsa thought of herself more as a cabaret artist than an actor. Mm. So I thought this is a perfect one-person musical. And because a lot of conflict, a lot of happy stuff, but and a lot of very silly body, dirty. Yeah,
she's very
songs.
Physical. She's like a very solid actor.
She was an Isadora Duncan dancer when she was young. So yeah, she was. She thought of herself as an entertainer, not an actor. Yeah.
Is there anything coming up with that that you're going to perform in, let's say, because this is airing like early December, early next year?
No, nothing yet. Nothing at the moment. I'm actually going to Los Angeles to look at spaces. I'm going there in a couple of weeks to look at possible venues. And then, but this is what I'm so excited about. Elsa, you know, in London, they have those blue plaques on houses, right, of famous people. Well, Elsa and her mother are finally going to get one. The apartment building that they lived in is going to get a blue plaque. And it all has to do with this cultural festival. And the Battersea Society in London is interested in having me do the Elsa show.
Oh.
So I can't even imagine. I'm so excited about it. So that won't be until June.
Okay. So you're keeping busy till then. And any other quick, in the last moments here, any other development projects you have going on besides that?
Oh my gosh, I'm writing all the time. I've written so many plays that are on the back burner right now since Elsa took over. And I got to get back to some of my other people.
Yeah, well, aren't you in the most perfect place, Chicago, for that? I mean... Boy, oh absolutely. Boy, it's a great place to...
Absolutely. So much talent here.
You can find us at your website at charlottebooker.com. And you can find out all what she's doing and everything like that. We have Charlotte Booker. She's an actress, writer, teacher, decades of experience in stage, film, and everything else. Charlotte, thank you so
much.
On TV, too. Television.
A lot of TV. That.
Thank you so much for coming on Art of the Air and sharing your arts journey.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you. It was so much fun.
Yes, thanks.
Art of the Year listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
This is Whitney Reynolds of The Whitney Reynolds Show, and you are listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Jessica Smith-Mattingly to Art on the Air. Jessica is an award-winning Chicago-based realist painter. She is inspired by the figurative paintings of the Baroque artists and the mystery and poetic beauty of the Symbolist and Pre-Raphaelite artists of the late 19th century. Currently, she works on commission and exhibits her paintings in museums and galleries. She also offers individual instructions and group classes at her studio. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Jessica. It's very, very nice meeting you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Jessica, it's a privilege to meet you. We got a chance to meet at the Salon Show conversation, because all three of us were in the Salon Show. So we're Salon Show people. But how we like to start our interview is get your origin story, where you're born, everything like that. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Jessica.
Yeah, I grew up in South Holland, Illinois, south suburb, Chicago. There's no artists in my family, but I think my parents encouraged my sister and I to be creative and use our imaginations. We were always creating things and making things. I always loved to draw, so my parents realized that, and they enrolled me in a community art class at the community center when I was 7. So that was my first art class that I took, and it was very memorable for me. Remember, I had a sketchbook for the class, and the teacher would have us draw portraits of other kids in the class. And I also remember drawing landscapes and animals and the first time I used oil pastels, which I absolutely loved. And so, yeah, that was my first art class as a seven-year-old. Other than that, took art classes, you know, middle school. I remember in seventh grade, my best friend lived next door, and she wasn't into art, but I guess we did everything together because I remember dragging her to school early in the morning so I could have more time to work on my art project because I never had enough time to do my projects in art class. And then my family had four Japanese high school exchange students that each lived with my family for a year when I was growing up. And when I was in eighth grade, we had a Japanese exchange student named Megumi. And so she was in high school, I was in eighth grade, and she was really good at art. I remember her just did really amazing drawings and paintings and made jewelry. And so I was just fascinated by her art. And then my parents knew that she was into art, so they took all of us to the Art Institute in Chicago and the art museum. That was my first time going to an art museum. And so I was really impressed by, you know, seeing all these amazing paintings in person. And
yeah, and just the amount of them in the museum. I mean, it's
Yeah, for sure.
Overwhelming in a great way.
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
Always so did you ever visit Japan?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. That's part of my story as well. So yeah, high school, I took art classes in high school, was also interested in like art and architecture. Actually, so my sophomore year of high school, my mom and I went to Japan for a few weeks in the summer just to visit our Japanese exchange students. So that was my first experience in Japan when I was in high school. So yeah, high school, I took art and then wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but ended up going to a four-year liberal arts college, Northwestern College in Orange City, Iowa, became an art major. And that's where I took my first painting class and absolutely fell in love with painting. I've always loved color and just the way that color can create a mood and express emotion. So in college, I did a lot more abstract expressionist type paintings, experimenting with color. And I was interested in painting people, but didn't feel like I had the skills to be able to paint people when I was an undergraduate in college.
So were they abstract figurative or landscapes, or were they just...
Mostly... pure abstract.
Okay.
A lot of, you know, fields of color. And I did a few that had some very abstracted figures in them. So, yeah, I wanted to, you know, try more realism, but I guess I didn't feel confident at that point that it was something I could do.
So I want to go back to 7 years old again.
Yeah, yeah.
And that whole time period, because that was amazing of your mother to do that. So in elementary school, was there much art, and did you get encouragement now, not only elementary, but middle school and high school? Did you get encouragement from your teachers? I mean, was your talent recognized and were you challenged?
Yeah. I mean, I think in elementary school, we had a little bit of art in school, but it was pretty basic. Maybe a little bit more craft. And I think I started having regular art classes probably in about fifth grade. And so, yeah, it was probably always my favorite class. And yeah, I mean, I learned things. My teachers are always
encouraging. And I meant by challenges, like, yeah. like my teachers, because my first art classes were like seventh grade. Mm-hmm. And he would give me extra, like he would call it like extra credit. He goes, you know, you've already got the A. Would you like an A plus, you know, draw all the presidents, you know, I remember that.
Yeah. No, I don't think I ever had anything like that. I think it was just, you know, following along with the curriculum. And, but yeah, I always put a lot of extra time into my projects.
So was it always drawing for you? Because I know high school, you get a taste of sculpture and ceramics and printmaking, but was it always drawing for you, or did you also delve into other medium?
Yeah, mostly drawing and painting. And in college, I also did some you know, ceramics and printmaking and photography. But yeah, I just always kept going back to drawing and painting.
So what was your journey into realism? You know, you talked about the abstract expressionism. And of course, I'm looking at your website now and see all the pieces you had in the salon show. And of course, one of the things that strikes me about those pieces is it's very much of Jessica in a lot of your work. In fact, the two pieces you had there, I think the one with the flowers and the one with the tattoo on the back is actually based on you. But you look at a lot of the stuff, you're in your work. But tell us about the journey to discover realism.
Yeah. So when I was a junior in college, I studied abroad in Paris for a semester. I just loved being surrounded by all the art and architecture in Paris. And so studied French, but then also printmaking and photography. And probably my favorite class when I was in Paris was my art history class. And for that class, we got a free pass to all the art museums in Paris. So, you know, instead of, you know, back in college in the States, our art history class, we'd be sitting in a dark room looking at slides on a screen. But for this art history class, we'd actually go to the museums and talk about the art in front of the artwork, which is amazing.
So much better.
Yeah, for sure. So I loved exploring all the museums, the large museums in Paris, but then also there's a lot of small art museums dedicated to individual artists. And my favorite one was the Gustave Moreau Museum, which was his former house and studio. He was a French symbolist artist in the late 1800s. And so I think he really influenced my work because I was fascinated by his use of color, but then also he would, you know, include figures in, you know, sort of a mysterious mythological scene. And so I think that was kind of my beginning of, you know, being interested in realism and wanting to incorporate figures into my artwork.
And mystical symbolisms. They're very like the one of the woman, and there's like a blue cloth under her foot and the doors open. It's just so lovely.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed that doors or doorways are a major feature in your work. It's kind of a, you know, and you wonder what's beyond the door or what's through there or the doorway if it's not an actual physical door. So continue your transition into realist painting.
Yeah. I graduated from college. I had a BA in art and didn't know what I wanted to do next, but I knew I liked to travel. So ended up going to Japan for 3 years and teaching English to Japanese junior high and high school students. And just loved being in Japan, loved the beauty of the culture. And I lived like 2 hours northwest of Tokyo near the mountains. So it was just a beautiful area and amazing people. And that was part of my journey. But I always wanted to go to art school and learn how to draw and paint people. So during that time, I found the School of Representational Art in Chicago. So after I got back from Japan, I studied at the School of Representational Art, or SORA, which it was a 4-year atelier, which is the traditional style, European style of art education, where we drew and painted from a live model 4 days a week for 4 years. So got a lot of practice working from the model. And that's where I really learned.
And that's like, it's all of that before paint, right? It's like lots and lots and lots of drawing.
Yeah. So first year students, we only worked in charcoal for a whole year. So drew from the model in charcoal and also drew these plaster cast sculptures in charcoal. So that taught us how to see the shapes and proportions and values and how to model a three-dimensional form. And so first year, all in charcoal. Second year was all black and white oil painting. So we did the same thing, worked from the model and the plaster cast, but in black and white oil paint for a whole year. So very disciplined, structured program. Third year, we finally got to use color oil paint. So that was exciting. So worked from the model and also did portraits and still lives. And fourth year was our final project where we put all those skills together into you know, figurative composition. So yeah, spent a whole year on that painting. That was probably one of the hardest things I did, but learned a lot from that. Yeah.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM. So talk about your process, like when you're conceiving of some of these, they're very ethereal. Like, well, I'll use the one with the girl with the tattoo looking through the at the door. The concept for that, how do you develop that? And also, do you work from photos for commissions? But I mean, those are two separate questions. But, you know, how do you say, okay, I'm going to put her doing this? Tell me your visualization process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, each painting is a little different. The idea usually starts from, sometimes it's an object that captures my attention or a person that I really want to paint, or I'm trying to capture an emotion or idea. So, you know, my initial ideas I'll sketch out in my sketchbook, just really rough in pencil, and sometimes add color to it with pastel pencils. And then, you know, as I develop the idea and the composition, I'd like to set up at least parts of the scene in my studio to figure out the lighting and the gesture and the details. So, you know, if I have a model that I'm working with, or sometimes I use myself as a model, and set up the lighting and just experiment with, you know, different gestures and facial expressions and hands, and trying to work out the details as well as the lighting and the shadows and color. So I take reference photos, you know, at that point, and then I'll use those reference photos, usually a combination of reference photos for, you know, I usually do a finished drawing, or at least a line drawing of the composition before I actually start the painting, just to, you know, make sure I have the composition worked out and make sure I'm ready to commit to a long painting. So
can you describe the genesis maybe of Captured? Do you start with like the concept of Captured and then the painting and the drawings develop? Or, you know, that one in particular, what was your thought process?
Yeah, the painting Caught.
Caught, yes.
That one actually, it started with the birdcage. I was just really interested in that birdcage and wanted to develop a painting around it, and wanted to express the emotion of feeling caught or trapped and like struggling to break free. So started with the birdcage, and then, you know, tried to figure out like what else can I add to it to create that story. The window behind it was actually a wall hanging that I saw that it almost looked like bars, and I felt like, well, that kind of, you know, that goes with the theme. And then experimented with the model with the ropes and, you know, feeling, you know, caught and trapped and, you know, kind of struggling to break free. And yet they're not so loose that I think she can break free. So I want that little element of hope in there as well. Right. So,
well, yeah. Besides people, you also work in some other forms, small works and still lives and things, and, you know, obviously portraits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I do portrait commissions. So paint people. I've done animal portraits as well, and some murals and still life. I do a lot of small paintings as well. Those are fun because they don't take quite as long as the big paintings. So, yeah.
But, what sizes do you normally work with your larger pieces?
Yeah, you know, some of my largest ones are like 3 by 5 feet. But probably more recently, I've been working a little bit smaller just to be more productive, get more paintings done. So like 2 by 3 feet. But yeah, it just depends, you know, on the level of detail and, you know, how much time I want to put into each painting. So.
And Larry might know the answer to this question because I wasn't at that talk. So when I looked at the painting at the salon show, the one with the tattoo, I look at it and it's like, it felt almost like the frame came first and the painting came after. Was there, mm-hmm. So which direction did it go?
Yeah, actually that's true. Yeah, that
is it?
Yeah, for that piece. That's not usually how I work, but that was a framed mirror that I bought probably 10 years ago, and it just sat in my studio, and I loved the frame, so I took the mirror out and always wanted to paint a picture to fit that frame. So it took me some time to figure out what that painting would be, but, you know, as I started to think of the idea for the painting threshold, I felt like that composition would be perfect in that frame because the painting threshold also includes a door, and I felt like that frame also had that feeling of a door to it. And so, oh, yeah.
Completely. It was like a magnet, that painting. I was, you know, just so gorgeous.
Thank you.
We know that you're going to be in a an exhibit at the Center for Performing Art in the Bachman Gallery, and we'll talk a bit more of it, but tell us a little about it. It's called After Sargent, and you have pieces in it. It's a collective show, but tell us about what you have in that show.
Yeah, it's an exhibit called After Sargent, curated by Brandon Johnson at the South Shore Arts Main Gallery in Munster. And I'll have five paintings in the show, three large figurative paintings, and then two of my smaller figurative paintings. And so it's a figurative realism show. There are nine artists who are showing work, some local, some national figurative realist artists, and artists I really admire. So I'm really excited to be a part of this show. And it's the idea behind it is following after John Singer Sargent, who was an American painter in the late 19th century, early 20th century in Europe, and a portrait painter, and just how artists today, portrait artists and figurative artists, have followed after his tradition and in some ways changed it. And so, yeah, I think it'll be a really interesting, amazing exhibit of work.
You also teach classes, correct? Both adult and children. So where do you do that and how do you do it? Tell us a little about those classes.
Yeah. My studio is in my home in Dyer, Indiana. So that's where I also teach my classes for all ages. I have classes for kids, teens, and adults. So mostly drawing and painting classes. And yeah, it's something I've done for a long time and always really enjoy teaching.
Is it mostly individual instruction or?
Some individual, some small group classes, usually not more than five students at a time.
So do you work exclusively in oils for your own work?
For the most part. I also, you know, I like drawing in charcoal and pastel as well. So those would probably be my main media, but mostly oil paint. That's my favorite. So. Yeah,
it's very luscious.
And on your website, you also have a blog. Tell us about what people could find in your blog.
Yeah, actually, my blog is about my classes. So just updating people what my students are up to and their projects. So that's what I have on my blog. And then I also have a news page on my website about my upcoming exhibits and what's going on.
Right. So as we get into the new year, I know your exhibit at the Bachman Gallery will be running through February. Do you have anything planned beyond that?
Not yet. Yeah, not yet. So we'll see what comes up.
That's great. So any projects you're working on that you have like in either developmental stage or whatever, or you're something that you're working on that you can tell us about?
Yeah, right now I've been experimenting with combining gold and silver leaf gilding with my oil paintings. So it's something I'm just in the beginning stages of, not sure how far I'll go with it, but having a lot of fun experimenting with different techniques and materials like that.
Well, that's interesting. That brings another question. Is there any kind of art that you haven't done, completely different than what you're doing, that you'd like to do or something like that?
You know, I like landscape. I haven't done a lot of it, but I'm probably also working more with having figures in outdoor landscape. So I think that's a direction I'll probably continue to move in as well.
We'd like you to tell us a little bit how people can find you online, websites, Facebook, social media, and such.
Yeah, my website is jessicasmit, SMIT.com. And on Instagram and Facebook, Jessica Smith Mattingly.
Okay. And then class information there also?
Yeah. On my website, I have my class information for kids and adults.
Very good. Well, we appreciate sharing the space with you on the Salon Show. It was a privilege there, and also at the little talk afterwards. Jessica Schmidt-Mattingly, she'll be in the exhibit at the Center for Visual Performing Arts, South Shore Arts Bachman Gallery. It's already opened November 22nd. It'll be running through February 22nd. And unfortunately, the opening reception has already happened, so you missed it there. But you can go see the work all the way through at the regular hours. It's called After Sergeant. She has five pieces in there. Jessica, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Coming next week on Art in the Air features the 2025 honorary artist for the Love of Art Fair, Kai Kensafidov, who's best known for her neo-medieval realistic paintings. Next, Jerry Ginther, whose work was recently exhibited at the Midwest Museum of American Art. Our spotlight's on singer-songwriter Patricia Tyson discussing her December 5th concert at Chicago's Epiphany Center for the Arts. We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art in the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show